So, we are going to continue talking about Joseph and the lessons we can learn from the life of Joseph. This morning, I don't really have a name for this lesson. We could call it, Where is Heaven in All This? Or we could call it, Intended Evil Becomes Ultimate Good. So anyway, each of us as individuals probably wonder at some point in our life, if we're really honest, where is heaven in this story? Why would God permit this to happen? Does this struggle serve any purpose? And Joseph, I would say, in the life he led, may have posed these questions. Last week, we talked about how Joseph did what was pleasing to God. And that's what the lesson was. Do what pleases God. So we're going to look at, we'll just read quickly about that decision he made, because it's going to be a continuation of that story. And Genesis, the 39th chapter, verses 1 through 10. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put under his authority. So it was from time to time that he had made him overseer of his house, and all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hands, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, Lie with me. But he refused and said to his master's wife, Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? So it was as he spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. Again, Joseph did what was pleasing to God. We also talked about how David made the wrong choices, and how the Corinthians were told to glorify God in their bodies and in their spirits, because their body and spirit, once they became Christians, it belonged to God. They were no longer servants of sin, but servants of righteousness. So Joseph made a righteous decision. He did what was pleasing to God. But guess what? If Mrs. Potiphar couldn't flirt Joseph into bed, she would force him. So she grabbed for his robe, and he let her have it. Verses 11 and 12. But it happened about this time, when Joseph went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, Lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. So when he ran, she decided that she is going to concoct a story She was ready with her lie and Joseph's garment when Potiphar returned. The garment would be proof. She began by telling the man of her house the story. Let's look at verses 13 through 15. And it says there, "And so it was when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of her house and spoke to them, saying, 'See, he has brought in to us a Hebrew to mock us. He came to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. And it happened when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside.'" And so then when Potiphar comes home, she tells him. So she kept his garment with her until his master came home. And then she spoke to him with words like these, saying, "The Hebrew servant whom you brought to us came in to me to mock me. So it happened as I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and fled outside. So it was when his master heard the words which his wife spoke to him, saying, 'Your servant did to me after this manner,' that his anger was aroused. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in the prison." So Potiphar basically charges Joseph with sexual assault, and he locks him in a jail. It's not like a jail that we have in modern times. It's not a prison in the modern sense, but it is basically, back then, it was a densely populated, underground, windowless rooms with damp floors. And of course, I'm sure they ate well, probably stale food with bitter water. The guards probably showed him into the dungeon and slammed the door. In Genesis 40 and verse number 15, when Joseph recalls it, he says, "For indeed, I was stolen away from the land of the Hebrews, and also I have done nothing here that they should put me into the dungeon." This is probably what Joseph was thinking when he was thrown in a dungeon. "I have done absolutely nothing wrong. Why, God?" Maybe he was thinking, "Why, God? Why is this happening to me?" Joseph had done his best in Potiphar's house. He had made a fortune for his employer. He had done everything that Potiphar had asked him to do. He had adapted to a new culture. He had resisted the sexual advances of Potiphar's wife. But how was he rewarded? His reward was a prison sentence. A prison sentence with no hope of parole. Since when does taking the high road, that's what Joseph did, when does taking the high road lead over a cliff? The answer, ever since the events of Genesis chapter 3. The chapter documents the entry of evil into the world when Satan, or Lucifer, the fallen angel, and as long as Satan prowls around today like a roaring lion, 1 Peter 5:8, seeking whom he may devour, he will wreak havoc among God's people. He will lock preachers like Peter and Paul in prison. He will exile Christians like the Apostle John on the Isle of Patmos. He will afflict friends of Jesus like Lazarus with diseases, and they will end up dying. But his strategies, as long as those people love God, his strategies backfire. The imprisoned Paul, what did he do? He wrote epistles from prison, and he taught the Roman guard. The banished John saw heaven, the revelation of heaven. The cemetery of Lazarus became a stage on which Christ performed possibly one of his greatest miracles. Intended evil becomes ultimate good. In Genesis 39, verses 20 and 21, then Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were confined. And he was there in prison, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy. And he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. You know how it says in Romans 8, 28, all things work together for the good to those who love God and are called according to his purpose. But again, intended evil becomes ultimate good. That should be on a bumper sticker or something, you know. Certainly, if we look at the struggles people suffer, when we really are opening our eyes to the world that is struggling and the things that people go through, and we go in a store and we see a person in a wheelchair, and we know that there's a life of struggling that comes with that. But we see somebody who is without sight, or somebody unable to hear, or somebody who, maybe there's a lot of people in our country that we're unaware of, they go home and guess what? Their pantry and refrigerator is completely empty. They don't have any food to eat from day to day. Or people, of course, many people having aching hearts. These, and there are many other, uphill, into the wind challenges in the world today. They are not easy, but they are not random either. God is not sometimes sovereign. He's not sometimes sovereign. He's always sovereign. God is not occasionally victorious. He's always victorious. God does not occupy the throne one day and vacate it the next, even though in our personal lives we can make it that way by choosing to serve sin instead of him, as we found out in Romans 6. But God doesn't vacate the throne. Even though people, including Christians, may act that way, God is on the throne. Let's read Jeremiah, the 30th chapter. Jeremiah, the 30th chapter. We're going to come back to Genesis, of course. And verse number 24. And it tells us here, it says, the fierce anger of the Lord will not return until he has done it and until he has performed the intents of his heart. What I want to say here is God is going to perform the intents of his heart. So we all have seasons in our life in which we find ourselves puzzled, but it does not bewilder God. God is not confused. God will perform the intents of his heart. He can and will use it for his purpose. Case in point, here's Joseph in prison. From an earthly viewpoint, the Egyptian jail was a tragic conclusion of Joseph's life. Seems like there's no way out. You're never going to get out of this place. Satan could chalk up a victory for the dark side, saying to Joseph, you do not know the power of the dark side. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, that's really not funny, but there is great power in the dark side. All plans to use Joseph ended with the slamming of the dungeon door. The devil had Joseph just where he wanted him. But guess what? God had Joseph just where he wanted him. So did God. Let's read Psalms, the 105th chapter. Psalms 105th chapter, verses 17 through 19. And it tells us here, and this talks about the Israelites, but it says here, he sent a man before them, Joseph, who was sold as a slave. They hurt his feet with fetters. He was laid in irons until the time that his word came to pass. The word of the Lord tested him. So what Satan intended for evil, God used it for testing. In the Bible, the word test or testing, it means like an external trial that purifies or prepares the heart. Just as fire refines precious metal from dross and impurities, a trial handled rightly, purges the heart from the same. Let's read Psalms, the 66th chapter, and verses 10 through 12. And it tells us here, it says, for you, O God, have tested us. You have refined us as silver is refined. You brought us into the net. You laid affliction on our backs. You have caused men to ride over our heads. We went through fire and through water, but you brought us out to rich fulfillment. So every day, God tests us through people. God can test us through pain. He can test us through problems. What we need to do is we need to stop and consider your circumstances. Can you identify the tests of today? Traffic could be a test when you're in a traffic jam. Threatening weather. As you're getting older, aching joints. That's certainly a test. Unloving people. Disrespectful youth. God is continually testing his people. He's testing our character. He's testing our faith. He's testing our obedience. He's testing our love. He's testing our integrity. He's testing our loyalty. God tested Abraham by asking him to offer his son Isaac. He tested Adam and Eve. They failed the test in the Garden of Eden. So character is developed and character is revealed by the tests we're going to go through. And all of life is a test. Again, God constantly watches your responses to people. He constantly watches your responses to problems. And it's mind-boggling because he can watch all of us at the same time and see what we're all doing. He constantly watches how we deal with success, how we deal with conflict, how we deal with illness, disappointment, and even the weather. He watches our simplest actions, like holding the door open for somebody or being polite to somebody. The simple things. For Joseph, he is passing the test. So if you see troubles, like when we have troubles in life, if we see troubles as nothing more than isolated incidents or hassles and hurts, what we will probably do is grow angry and we will grow bitter. Yet if we see the troubles that we go through in life as trials and tests used by God for his glory and for your maturity, then even the smallest incidents take on significance. Each day life may have a pop quiz, but some seasons of life that we go through. They're basically final exams. So brutal sudden pitfalls of stress or of sickness or sadness, like Joseph, we need to do our best to please God. Like Joseph, sometimes your life can be rewarded by doing your best to please God. You can become incarcerated like Joseph, or you can go through even a lot more. Even though you're trying to please God, He might put you through even more. What is the purpose of the test? Why didn't God keep Joseph out of prison? He did the right thing. Why didn't He keep Joseph out of prison? The answer might be found in James. In James, the first chapter, and verses 2 through 4, it says here, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience." His faith was being tested. It could produce patience. "But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." As a boy, Joseph seemed to, if you really think about it, we don't know, it's not all revealed to us, but it seems to be he was, to me, spoiled by his father. And Joseph talked about, as a boy, his dreams. He talked about his great ambitions. Possibly, and I'm not, it doesn't, the Bible really doesn't say anything negative about Joseph, but possibly he could have been a little full of himself. Even in Potiphar's house, when he got there, Joseph was the head of the estate. He was quickly promoted. He was quickly noticed. Success came easily. We do not know, because we were not there. Only this is between God and Joseph, but maybe there was some pride there that could get in the way. If so, a prison term, that would definitely purge any pride that he had. God knew the challenges that laid ahead. He knew the challenges that laid ahead for Joseph. And he used Joseph's prison time to strengthen his servant. Again, we go back to Genesis, the 39th chapter. And as I get older, I realize it takes me longer and longer to get to the verses. But anyway, Genesis 39, and we're going to read verses 21 through 23 now. And it says here, "But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. The keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's authority, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made to prosper." So talk about a crash course in leadership now. Joseph managed willing servants in Potiphar's household. They were willing servants. But in prison, he was assigned to people. And you think these people were probably unruly. They were probably disrespectful. They were probably ungrateful. That's what I would think. Joseph could have, when entering prison, he could have sat in the corner. And he could have thought, "I've learned my lesson. I'm not going to run anything for anybody anymore." Okay, but Joseph didn't complain. He didn't criticize. He displayed a willing spirit. Again, the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph all the prisoners who were in the prison. He was especially kind to two of the prisoners, it seems like. The butler and the baker. The butler and the baker, both officers of Pharaoh, they were placed, because all the prisoners were placed in Joseph's hands, so they were placed in Joseph's care. And one morning, Joseph noticed that they both had frowns on their faces. And we realized that he could have chosen, because when we see somebody who has a frown on their face, we could choose. We can choose to dismiss their expressions. Anyway, what concern is their sorrow to me? That's what Joseph could have thought. What concern is their sorrow for me? Who cared if they were sullen? Who cared if they were bitter? So Joseph, however, took an interest in them. In fact, the first recorded words of Joseph when he was in the prison were kind ones. Genesis, the 40th chapter, verses 1 through 7. It came to pass after these things that the butler and baker of the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry with his two officers, the chief butler and the chief baker. So he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison, the place where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, so they were in custody for a while. Then the butler and baker of the king of Egypt, who were confined in prison, had a dream. Both of them, each man's dream in one night, and each man's dream with his own interpretation. And Joseph came in to them in the morning, and looked at them, and saw that they were sad. See, he saw they were sad, so he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in the custody of his lord's house, saying, "Why do you look so sad today?" Here is a man, Joseph, abandoned by his brothers. He's sold into slavery. He's unjustly imprisoned. But he's still tender toward other people. Wouldn't compassion be a suitable quality for the soon-to-be, we're just going to call it this, this is not what it was called. Wouldn't compassion be a trait that you would want to have for the soon-to-be director of the Worldwide Hunger Relief Program? God wasn't finished with Joseph, so he was still, you know, making Joseph the kind of person he needed to be. Both the baker and the butler, they're troubled by their dreams. In the dream, the butler saw a vine with three grape-bearing branches. He pressed the grapes into Pharaoh's cup and gave it to him. To the king. The baker dreamed about bread. Three baskets were on his head, and the birds ate the bread on the top basket. So both men received the interpretation from Joseph, who received the interpretation from God. What would he do with the interpretation that he received from God? So Joseph gets this interpretation, he receives it from God. Now he has a choice what he's going to do with this interpretation. Would he share it? Because the last time he spoke of his dreams, he ended up in a pit. So I'm not going to say anything, maybe he's thinking. Besides, only 50% of the revelation of the dreams was good news. If called to stand before Pharaoh, would Joseph be willing to accurately convey God's word? This was a test, but Joseph passed it. He gave the butler the good news. You will be out in 3 days and serving Pharaoh again. And he gave the butler bad news. You will be dead in 3 days. So one would get a new start and the other would get a noose around his neck. Test, test, test. The dungeon looked like a prison. I can't even imagine what it smelled like, but it smelled like a prison, I'm sure, and we don't even want to really think about that too deeply. it sounded like a prison, but for Joseph's, it was more like a, it was more like a boot camp. God was preparing his heart. The chapters in our life, the people around us. Some chapters in people's lives might look like a rehab. Or it might look like, it might smell like unemployment, or it might sound like a hospital, but it may be we are just in training. God never forgets us, just the opposite. He chooses to train us. We need to realize that. The Hebrew verb for test comes from the word to take a keen look at or to choose. God chooses to train us. We need to dismiss the notion, because some people do, they just think, God doesn't see my struggle. We need to dismiss that. God sees our struggles. God is fully engaged. He sees the needs of tomorrow. And accordingly, he uses our circumstances to create a test for today. Does he not have the authority to do so? God is the potter. We are the clay. Christ is the shepherd. We are the sheep. Christ is the gardener, we are his branches. Christ is the teacher, we are his students. We need to trust God's training. You'll get through this. If God can make a prince, because that's basically what Joseph became, even though it wasn't his title. If God can make a prince out of a prisoner, he can make something good out of each and every one of us. We need to remember all tests are temporary. All tests that we go through are limited in duration. In 1 Peter, the first chapter, 1 Peter, the first chapter, and verse 6. 1 Peter, the first chapter, verse 6. It says here, in this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, see it says a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials. Well, why? That the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though it is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ. You know, tests or trials, they never last forever. In Job, the 8th chapter, verse 9, it says, for we were born yesterday and know nothing, because our days on the earth are a shadow. So some tests end on the earth, but all tests will end when we either die or the Lord comes again. In the meantime, let us follow the example of Joseph. Let God train you. If you are faithful, the Bible says, with a few matters, he will set you over many. In Matthew, the 25th chapter, Matthew 25 and verse number 21, it says here, his Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant, you are faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Again, Joseph cared for the butler. He cared for the baker before he cared for the nations. The reward of good work then could be greater work. Excel in small things. When you are given a task, you should take it on. When you see a hurt, address it. That's what Joseph said. These people are sad. I want to know why they're sad. What if Joseph had ignored the sadness on their faces? Of Pharaoh's officers. What if he had focused on his needs? Because that's what most people do today. They focus on their own needs and ignore the needs of others. Would God still have liberated him from prison? Of course, we're just asking that question, and we know that God knew what Joseph would do. But if Joseph wouldn't have done that, would he have been liberated from prison? We do know the kindness of Joseph really opened the door of the jail or the dungeon, because the cupbearer ends up introducing Joseph to Pharaoh 2 years later. But compassion matters to God. This is time today for Christians. It's a time for service. We serve God by serving others, not self-centeredness. We need to cancel the pity party. Woe is me. And love the people that God brings to you. And share the gospel, the message that God has revealed to us. Love people enough to tell them about God and Jesus Christ. And tell people that God loves them. In 2 Corinthians, Paul, of course, went through so much. But in 2 Corinthians, the first chapter, 2 Corinthians, the first chapter, verse 4, Paul says this: who comforts us in all our tribulation? Well, let's go back to verse 3 so we understand what's going on. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of mercy and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our tribulation, that we may be able to comfort those who are in any trouble with the comfort with which we ourselves are comforted by God. As living life, someone might say, I did not sign up for this crash course, somebody might say, in single parenting. Or, I have not signed up for this crash course in taking care of a disabled spouse. Or I've not signed up for this crash course in taking care of a spouse who does not even remember my name. You did not sign up for your troubles, but God enrolled you. God has taken intended evil and he has woven it into ultimate good. He has rewoven it into his curriculum. Why? So you can teach others what he has taught you. And your message of living for him, you can share with others. Joseph could have said, God, why am I in this prison? Woe is me. I just want to die. And so can we feel that way at times. Rather than saying, God, why is this happening? We should ask, God, what? What can I learn from this experience? In Deuteronomy, the 11th chapter, Deuteronomy 11 chapter verse 2, know today that I do not speak with your children who have not known or who have not seen the chastening of the Lord God, his greatness and his mighty hand and his outstretched arm, the chastening of God. Ask God to change your circumstances instead of asking him to change your circumstances, rather than asking him that. Ask him to use your circumstances to change you. See, we shouldn't want God to change our circumstances, but use the circumstances I'm going to encounter in my life to change me. Life is a required course. We might as do as well as we can to pass the test, because we are here and we are living. God is at work in each of us, whether we know it or not. Lamentations 3:33, for he does not afflict willingly, nor grieve the children of men, Let's just look at a few more verses. Psalms, the 119th chapter. It's probably going to be a few more than a few. We've probably got 3 or 4 minutes yet. Psalms, the 119th chapter, verse 67. And it says here, before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I keep your word. Verse 71. It is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I may learn your statutes. Verse 75. I know, O Lord, that your judgments are right, and that in faithfulness you have afflicted me. Why does God afflict? It says there, a loving God disciplining better. It's better than any, I think Pete mentioned this in Bible class, that his discipline is better than any earthly father's discipline. He does it because he loves us and he wants to bless us. God does not relish our sufferings, but he delights in our development. In Philippians, the first chapter, Paul wrote to the brethren at Philippi, Philippians, the first chapter, and verse number 6, and it says here, being confident of this very thing, that he who has begun a good work in you, God has begun a good work in you, will complete it until the day of Jesus Christ. God will not fail. God cannot fail. Hebrews, the 13th chapter, it tells us something else that God will do. Hebrews 13, verse 21, it says here, in Hebrews 13, 21, that's the wrong verse, God will make you complete in every good work to do his will, working in you what is well-pleasing in his sight through Jesus Christ, to whom be glory forever and ever. So every challenge, large or small, in our lives, it can equip us for a future opportunity to serve God. So if we are struggling, we should not see our struggle as an interpretation to our entire life, but we should see our struggle as a preparation for our life ahead. No one said the road would be easy or painless, but God will use your messes for something good. Hebrews, the 12th chapter, and verse number 8. Hebrews 12, verse 8, it says here, but if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you are illegitimate and not sons. In verse number 10, it says here, for they indeed for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them, but he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. God disciplines us with our good welfare in mind. With every trial, God is fashioning us into holy people, set apart for his good purposes. The result of God's chastening, the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. One more verse, Romans 8, verse number 28, but I'd like to just go back to verse 18 first of all, because this is what it's really talking about. In Romans 8 and verse number 18, it says, for I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. So there are sufferings of this present time, but then verse 28, and we know all things work together for the good to those who love God and to those who are called according to his purpose. All circumstances will work together in cooperation for the believer's good, because if we are servants of God and we are servants of righteousness, we will be conformed to Jesus Christ now and reign with him later. And so, again, let us realize that God is behind everything. And our struggles are for a purpose, to help us to be closer to God. Next week, we're going to talk about wait while God works. That song would have been good for next week, 884. But we need to wait on God. He's now going to wait 2 years in prison before he actually gets set free. So again, wait while God works.